The Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be the mini show for the month of April 2024. So we'll talk about whatever we damn well please. I got some games. I got some movies. We'll take this conversation anywhere we want to go. Dez is here. Sherlock is here. Echo is here. Back here sitting on the window. The gang's
Echo's
all
here.
Echo's
a cat for those listening.
Oh yeah,
Sherlock is a dog.
She interrupted like an outro I was doing for a different show where she kept on trying to climb the wall. But neither here nor there. That's
just a hell of a trip.
Yeah, that's not what people want to hear about. You know what I want to hear about the most? Wes, did you ever hear back from Target?
No.
They never.
Nobody contacted me, not even my coworkers. The only person who contacted me was the guy who works in the electronics department, but he's a separate company that sells phones. He's the person that contacted me and be like, hey, you coming back? Are you doing all right, buddy? I was like, I'm not coming back. He's like, all right, good working with you, man. Let me know if you want to hang out sometime. I'm like, you bet it, buddy. That's the only thing I heard. Target never mentioned anything to me. I went to the Castleberry Target because it's near where my girlfriend lives, and to like pick up a TV that we ordered for her new house and everything. And my one of the like ETLs, one of the big bosses at the Oviedo Target was there assisting that day. I locked eyes with him. And then we just went our separate ways.
Amazing.
Just nothing. And I noticed the other day that they caught on because my employee discount is gone from the app. So they're like, yeah, I'm indeed not working there anymore.
Oh, man. And just for context, I don't think we talked about this in the podcast. Wes ghosted his job.
Oh, completely. Just like, nope, not going back. 6 years gone. Just
tremendous.
Down the drain.
Ten out of ten. Well, that's not down the drain. They're not taking the money back. You still get to keep
it. That's fair. That's fair.
And that's the important thing.
Yep.
So, I guess I'm the only one who hasn't changed jobs recently.
When did you change jobs, right?
No, I'm the
You've been there for a little bit.
I actually was just talking about it with my boss today on the call. I'm coming up on a year. So, I know, I'm essentially doing the same job, right? It's basically just still doing the same like fund accounting kind of work. But yeah, I quit my previous employer of like 10 years and I'm starting up with this new company. And it's good. It's really good. Yeah. It was May of last year I signed on with them. So it's all so much better.
Is buying up all that GameStop stock?
No, we've actually moved on to the DWCA, the Trump stock.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do want to see that movie.
I watched that movie.
Good?
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. It is interesting, like, because it definitely like takes a side. It definitely takes a side of like, hey, the people who are buying this GameStop, or at least like the characters you're following who are buying this GameStop stock, like actually believe that it is something that is undervalued, and they're not like totally trying to screw over the Wall Street investors who are shorting the stock. But like highly entertaining, like Paul Dano is really good.
Yeah, he's great.
They give like you get like these little snippets and vignettes of some other characters that you're following who are also buying the stock. But yeah, he really carries the movie because he's like your primary character. But yeah, you get to like Seth Rogen as one of like these like portrayed as the scummy like investment banker who's gonna lose a ton of money because he's made a bet that the GameStop stock is going to keep going down. It keeps going up because people on the internet becomes like this meme stock and people keep buying it. But yeah, it like takes something that like could be like very inside baseball, like for the investor world, and makes it something that's highly entertaining and watchable. I mean, there's like a couple of movies that have
Big
done
Short.
That, like Big Short, like I thought was all like a little bit inside baseball. Like there are some things that they do like make attempts to explain how some things work, but Dumb Money does a better job of dumbing it down to make it more entry level.
Yeah.
That was the thing about Big Short. It was a lot going on. It was like complicated. Like I had a hard time following at certain points. Like I kind of got the idea what's happening, but it still was an entertaining movie. I think Big Short.
Well, I think it might have been.
It's two different things. Like what the scenario that would happen with the subprime mortgage crisis was like a very complex thing. Like dumb money is not a very complex thing. Like the meme stock stuff is just literally people, you know, making accounts on Robinhood and then just buying shares of GameStop and hoping that they will just drive interest in it. Again, it's not like you have to talk about like asset-backed securities and things like that. Yeah. That the Big Short is all about. Dumb money is again like that's his whole slogan is I just like the stock.
Yeah,
like the whole point is they're low information.
Do they at least explain the stock market a little bit? Because there's like, I understand very little about the stock market.
There wasn't really much that they had to explain. Basically, like the villains, the rich investors were making a bet that GameStop stock was going to keep on dropping, and if they win this bet, they'll make a lot of money. And then there are people who are not professional investment bankers. People that they call dumb money, which is where they get the name of the movie. And
I mean, like,
they're
retail investors, like retail investors, like small time investors. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not, they're saying like, no, we're going to buy this stock because we think that like, this is a viable company and that there's value here. Like this company is undervalued. So we think this stock is going to go up, and by buying it, you're going to make the price go up. And they do touch a little bit on some of it, like, hey, maybe not everyone is in this because they actually believe in the company. Like there might be some people on the internet who are just trying to put the squeeze on investment bankers because there's like a deadline or something to where like they have to dump their shorting the stock or something like that, where like, hey, here's your deadline. If it passes the deadline and like the stock is doing well enough, you're going to lose a ton of money.
Yeah, that kind of captures it. That's the idea, is that these the institutional investors saw a company that was underperforming and one that they frankly thought was on the way out the door. So they were betting on it to, to fall. So they were essentially, selling off all of these shares at these lower prices, hoping that when it came time to, clear out the position, that the price would have moved in their favor. So it gets a little bit more complex, but then that's all the retail investors are doing. So they're driving the price up. So when it comes time for them to actually acquire the shares to sell off at the original agreed upon price, the price is now up and they got to eat that difference.
Yeah. So something that I think they do a good job of explaining what's going on in the movie. And we've probably mentioned this a couple of times on the show before. When you're shorting a stock, you're basically selling something you don't own yet. You're selling shares and agreeing that, okay, I'm going to buy them back.
Well, you can
basically get back to zero, but you're selling something you don't have yet, and you're betting that you're going to have to buy it back at a lower price and therefore have made money.
Well, sort of. I mean, those are called naked shorts. That's what you would call it if you didn't own the underlying whatever it is. And it doesn't necessarily have to be an equity like a stock. It could be a commodity too, like, for example, I think it's like corn. Like 90% of the selling of the buying and selling of the corn commodity, like, doesn't involve literally moving actual corn. It's all speculative. They're all speculating.
That's the title of this podcast, the buying and selling of the corn commodity.
Well, yeah. The name of this. Call it corn or call it oil. Whatever you want. You can there's whatever the various commodities are that exist, and it's the same for stocks. It's the same for equities, right? So if you have them, it's a way that if you already own the shares, you've got a locked in price on it in advance. I realize as we're talking about this, this is so like in the weeds. I think this is what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, this, well, is like, this is a video game podcast.
Well, let's talk about the GameStop stock. At the start of this whole thing, the price was sitting around, I think, $9. At its peak, like after this huge thing, it was around $300. I haven't checked recently, but I believe the stock price is back around $9.
Yeah, it settled back down.
So like this was absolutely a kind of a flash moment in a weird investment strategy. And now keep in mind, all that's happened is the institutional investors are now monitoring quote unquote meme stocks. They're looking for these things too. It's no longer a threat to them or a risk to them. They're the ones that are probably making the most profit off of it now at this point.
Yeah, yeah, and they touch a little bit on that because, like, in the movie, because they have a few scenes with, like, some of the founders of that app Robinhood, which the retail investors used to, you know, buy and sell their stock, and how this particular company that was facilitating this buying and selling wasn't on the up and up and couldn't deliver on everything that they were promising to be able to deliver.
So yeah, that's what's up.
But yeah,
Anyway,
speaking of games, like, don't buy your games at GameStop. Go find another place.
I mean,
don't go to Target either anymore, apparently.
No, screw that place. Buy them off Amazon.
Yeah, best
They're
website
the one
in the world.
Sponsors this anyways.
I have a game. Oh, Ryan, have you finished Unicorn Overlord?
Not yet. I actually, the last time I booted up the game, I was literally, just going through the various proposals just to see what they would say and what they would all do. But yeah, I've conquered the four kingdoms and now it's just a matter of going through the final stages. My crew is sitting around the low 40s, I think. So, yeah, I think I'm pretty ready for it.
Yeah, I finished the game off, a few days ago, and the penultimate boss fight. So, you know, you enter the last mission, there's a big boss fight, you got to take down that emperor again. There's a really specific strategy that I had to use that I actually ended up having to look at some help to get, like, a general build for a party and how you're going to want to take this guy down. I don't want to give too much away because you're about to do. I'm interested to see if any of the stuff you've come up with already works. Because okay. I couldn't get anything to work on this guy until I actually looked up. Like, okay, well, have these types of characters do this type of thing, and have these other characters do this other thing. Which it wasn't like as specific as like these ones need to hold this gear. It's just more generally you want this group of characters to perform this action and these other characters to back them up with this action. So there's like different ways you can spec it out, and it's not like locked. Like these are the five characters you want to use. You can have a lot of different types of characters and builds doing this thing. But just kind of like the general way to approach doing damage to him got really specific. But otherwise, like that was really the only roadblock that my groups had faced to that point. I was in the mid-40s when I actually reached the boss because I gained a few levels when I was actually doing the mission. It's a pretty big mission. And all of my parties were doing really well. And then once I got through that particular fight, there's the one last mission to take down the ultimate boss, and all my parties did really well the way they were spec'd out. And I went through not all of the Colosseum. I went through the Colosseum enough to get the character in there, and then, of course, opens up more fights. I did a few of those, but then I went ahead and finished off the game. There's quite a bit that you can go through if, you know, you want to do things like a fully spec out characters, doing all the side stuff. I thought that going through, there's those treasure hunting missions where you dig up the treasure maps and you go find them down. I'd only found three in each area, and then I was just looking up side content and oh no, there's actually five treasure quests in each area.
Yeah, I got all five in the first three regions, and in the fourth one I've been doing this thing where I just get all the maps and then try to find them all at the same time. So I've got three of the five, but I also kind of just I'm doing a little digging, but there's other stuff to do in the game.
Yeah, there's another a post game mission that will open up, which looks pretty cool. I haven't attempted it yet because I pivoted over to some other things, but maybe I'll get back to that one. There's more Colosseum stuff that you can do.
Have you done the online stuff for the Colosseum?
I haven't done any online stuff. No, but looks like how'd you do?
Oh, it's good. Well, so the way that it works is you know, you get 10 fights a day, basically, that count towards points. And then you get, if you, your first win, if you win the first fight, and you select from five different other teams people have submitted. So you sort of pick your opponent going in before it does sort of the auto battle for you. And you can do up to 10 of those a day. And if you win your first fight, you get 10 battle points. And then if you win again, you get 12. So every time after that, it adds 2 to your total that you get. But if you lose the fight, it sets back to 10. So it's like if you can keep a win streak going, you can rack up a lot of these points. And those points can be turned in for some really powerful items, which I've been doing.
Are they the Colosseum coins, or is it a different currency?
I believe it's the same currency you get that they give you some from just doing the offline fights. If you just go through the main order of them. Like, there's some weapons in there. Like, every base kind of weapon has a specific thing. I forget the name of it, but it's, like, bright red. And it's got, like, pretty good base damage. It's, like, 21 damage, but then also gives you 1 AP. So, like, AP and get any items that give you plus AP and PP are, like, amazingly useful. So, I've been collecting. And the shop has 3 of each, so you can get a bunch of them.
But, yeah, like you're saying, all of the... Like, if weapons or gear that just, like, stack your turns to just give you more actions in a fight, super useful. And you can also, there's some black market merchants or, like, through the Colosseum, you can get that Feverite. It's a material that you can take to the blacksmith to fully max out that particular piece of gear, usually like a weapon or a shield. You can't do it like accessories or those sorts of things. But that's a good way to take some, like, hey, I have this weapon that doesn't do great damage, but I like the effect that it has. So let's make it stronger.
Yeah, I found it's also just a good way to spend all the excess honor that you have in the game, because it's a currency that you need it until you don't. And then you're like, what the hell do I do with all this?
Yeah, true. It'd be nice if you could, like, churn that honor into just gold or something like that, because, you know, once it's really only good for the blacksmith after you're done stationing characters at every town that you can garrison, because then you're just churning resources, and you can churn those resources into cash and more honors, and then what are you doing with the honors except upgrading gear? But yeah, they make it to where once you have all those towns garrisoned, you can build up cash super quick.
Yeah. So who'd you end up proposing to?
I just went with Scarlet.
Yeah.
I think, like, this the sort of chosen route, the sort of canonical, like, the direction they're sort of pushing you in. And I liked how it was set up with them on the same team, because with those two pieces of gear, you're stacking a lot of turns between the two of them.
Did you notice that it's all voice acted? Like, literally, like, all 50, 60, however many different proposals you can make in the game all have unique voiced dialogue, which I was like, that's needlessly impressive. That's very, very cool that they did that.
Yeah, that's near Hades level of attention to detail.
Yeah, yeah, very cool that they got all of these different, like, voice actors and actresses in the mix on it.
Who'd you go with?
I haven't actually made the decision, because I'm still listening through the dialogue to see who I like who I like the most and who's the funnest. Probably going to be this Baron Geria character, the Dark Marquis.
She's real good.
Virginia. She's like one of the few that's also, like, super into it, if you want to know who actually, like, cares about you and who's just like, sure, this is a marriage of convenience. It's funny. Like, yeah,
Virginia was also a solid option.
Yeah. Rosalind, the archer woman from the cold region, like the Unifi. You know, if you listened, again, it's one of the things, if you care to listen to all the dialogue, you can, and see who like is it really into. And usually, if you've got like 3 dialogue options with someone, they're probably like one of those characters that's sort of like deeply invested in you. If you just get like 2 lines of dialogue, they're probably not into you that much. But yeah, I thought that was a really funny touch in the game. And yeah, and since it seems, again, I haven't made the final decision, but it's going to boost somebody's stats. Everybody online was saying go with one of the Elven Augurs. Like, I think Rosalind is one of them. They're saying that that's a really powerful upgrade. But at any rate, yeah. So I haven't rolled credits on it yet. It's just one of those things where it's like, I probably could if I just clocked a couple more hours into it just to finish the game off from the story. But I don't know. I still feel like there's a lot to do in the game. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Wes, why don't you tag in with something?
I'm going to tag in with two games because I'm going to talk about them so briefly.
Do it.
So, three games I'm going to be bringing up in this podcast tonight. All of them I got through my PlayStation monthly games.
Boo.
So, they just give you monthly games. But they're games that they're, I always liked. It looks interesting. I don't really want to put money into those games. So this game became the perfect opportunity to try them out. And two of them, I really don't care at all about, really. One of them was Steel Rising, which is this weird Souls-like kind of game with the, that kind of like gameplay and everything like that, except you're like some kind of French robot during the revolution or something.
During the robot revolution?
Yeah, I guess. I don't care. I played a little bit of it. I got through the first boss, second. I had a couple of bosses. Just random big enemies. I don't know. It probably would be a good game. I just don't care enough about it. I'd rather just go back to Elden Ring and prepare for the DLC that's coming out later this year. So, there's that. The other one was some kind of like Immortals of something. I forget what it's called. But it's a first-person shooter. Not an online lane. It has a story. It's a first-person single-player story game. But instead of like guns and stuff like that, you got this weird bracer thing, and you cast magic spells. It's okay. Pretty fast-paced combat at times, but it's colorful. And like blue laser beams and red and green explosions, and like it's a big flashy game, but I don't see much depth to it. I may keep playing it here and there, but it's not a game I'm really going to be putting that much attention to.
You could always play more Tears of the Kingdom.
I could. I just could. But the next game I've been playing a bunch, and I plan on playing more of it, but I'll get to that later.
Okay. I'll tag it with a different one then. So about a month back, I talked about that game Trace Memory, or Another Code. They did that remake of that noted F-tier franchise. So I've been playing through the sequel, which is also in that remake collection. And it's even more of a visual novel than the first one. There's very light like adventure game elements, solve this little puzzle here and there, but a lot of times it's like, okay, we're gonna talk at each other for a few minutes, move to the next location, and characters are gonna talk at each other a little bit more, which is fine. I just kind of let it run its course on my desk at work while I'm doing like some computer work that I gotta do, and every, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, I'll pick up the controller, walk the character to the next segment, and characters will talk at each other some more. Sometimes I'll have the volume loud enough to where I can hear it. Sometimes I won't. It doesn't really matter to me. It's like I said before when I talked about the first game, it's a game that I think is like more interesting that it exists than it is interesting to play. Visual novels are not my thing. There was a point today where I was, you know, about 20 or 30 minutes away from clocking out at work. So I had the game running on my Switch and then on my desk, and then in my hands I had my 3DS playing Pokemon while this game was talking. I was like, oh wait, they want me to move. Put down my 3DS, moved around a little bit, got to the next talkie segment, picked my 3DS back up, got back to planting berries and training Pokemon. So, I mean, it's not a game that I would recommend playing. But if you find a copy for cheap and like these sorts of like weird corners of Nintendo history, sure, why not? Go for it. Ryan, you got anything else?
Not in the world of gaming.
Okay. I'll do one more game and then tag back over to you, Wes.
You got it.
I finished off Baton Kaitos Origins, a game that I've been trying to beat for nearly 20 years. I played it a bunch of times on the GameCube and was never able to finish it because other games constantly popped up. Then it re-released on Switch. I started it up earlier this year, and then I put it down because Unicorn Overlord came out. And when Unicorn Overlord, when I finished that one, okay, I picked it up. It's like, okay, I am definitely finishing this game this time because it's on a Switch. It's portable. I have no excuse. And I've always burnt out on this game because other things came out. This time, I am not. And I'm going to tell you guys, there are things in this game that make it like super friendly. Like you can speed up the game, you can turn battles onto auto win. Without those features, I wouldn't have finished this game again. I would have burnt out again. I don't know what it is about this game. Well, I could probably pinpoint a couple of things about the game that when I get to a certain point in it, I always hit a wall. And I think it's mostly because the battle system doesn't really evolve past what it is by the time you get to halfway in the game. They're not really introducing new elements. The first game actually does a really good job of giving you more cards with basically different features to keep like you thinking about what you're doing in the battle system. Whereas in Origins, it's basically, okay, what are my newest, strongest cards? Let's just put them in the deck and take out other ones. So, I mean, I was probably a good 80% of the way through the game. And I got to the point, I was like, okay, if I don't get to the end quickly, I'm not going to finish this game. So I turned the game speed up all the way, turned on the auto battle wins, and just made a blitz for it and finished in about 4 hours. So that was the
way that the developers intended.
The way the developers and God intended. otherwise, like, I would have put this game down again and said, I'll get back to this later, and I never would have gone back to it. There are some things that I think are really admirable about the game. I think that it, like, especially for a GameCube game, looks really good. I think that they did a good job of having an accessible battle system, but like I was saying, like they're up at a point, it just kind of stops growing, which was a problem. I think they did a good job of reusing locations from the first game while introducing some other locations to keep like the adventuring aspects of it interesting. I think that they hit you with just a ton of battles, which might compound the problem of the battles not evolving past the halfway point. Even though like they do the right thing and have the battles visible on the screen, like they're not random battles, there are most battles are just unavoidable. They're directly in your path. So you can see them coming, but nothing you can do to avoid them. But yeah, I mean, again, it's another like interesting GameCube remake. I really like the first one. First one's well worth playing. The second one, also worth playing. I don't like it as much as the first one, which is weird because like if you had asked me before this remake came out, I probably would have said like the GameCube versions, I liked the second one more. But now after playing through these remakes, I think the first one's definitely the way to go. Wes, you're back in.
All right. Now, I don't know if you guys would guess this, but what is the one type of game that I typically don't have positive things to say, but I keep playing them?
Dating sim.
MMORPGs.
Oh, roguelites.
Match three puzzle.
It's roguelites.
You got to give us time to guess.
I wasn't done guessing, but what other did you have? Light runners?
Nah, well,
walking simulators.
So I a roguelike
like Dance
game
Dance style, like the rhythm games?
All right. You let me know what you guys have done. I'm going
to... fitness boxing. Roguelites? Is it roguelites?
It's roguelikes. Yeah, it's roguelikes.
Okay.
So I started playing Skull the Hero Slayer.
Uh-huh.
It's
never heard of it.
It's actually not bad, but I mean, it's no Hades.
What kind of game is it? Is it like Time Crisis?
I love Time Crisis.
That's a really good game, like House of the Devil.
Why am I a part of this podcast? Why am I here? I try. I actually have things to add.
Do you have notes?
No, I don't have notes. Oh. Yeah,
it's... All right, I'm done. I'm not naming any more genres of gaming. What's the title of the game again? Sorry, I totally was.
Skull the Hero Slayer.
Skull the Hero Slayer. Okay.
So good name. The big thing about the game is that you're swapping through different skulls. You're actually replacing your skull with another one and changing your movesets and the way your character works. And you can have up to two skulls equipped at a time, and you switch back and forth between them. And each skull kind of have like their trait, and then they have a swapping ability, so ability they do when you swap back to that skull. And then some of them will have just one ability, and then through the run, you can collect a resource to level the skull up, and sometimes they unlock another ability. But that's kind of like the thing, is that you're getting a different of these. I don't know how many skulls there are in the game, but you're getting different skulls, different runs, and doing different builds with the different kind of items you get to boost your stats and things like that. And skulls are pretty cool. There's like your basic skulls, like just the dude with the sword, and he has a slash ability, or an archer, and he has some kind of arrow shooting ability. And then you get a mage, who oddly enough is melee. It just has a staff, and it beats him with the staff, and then it has like some kind of explosion type ability. And the skulls also have a couple of different abilities, so it's also random which of those abilities that particular skull will have. So the mage has got one where it throws like a ball out and it explodes, or he will cause an explosion where he is, or he'll throw three orbs into the air, and when they land, they explode. But you'll get one of those three randomly when you get the skull. And some of them are really cool. They're a lot of fun. And then as you're going through the run, there's certain places where you can either upgrade the skulls if you get resources for it, or you'll get different items. You can have, I think, 9 items you can hold, and they all just give you like increased magic damage, increased physical damage, increases crit and attack speed. Your hits have a chance to stun or freeze, and there's a bunch of different builds you can do with it. And it gets, a lot of different enemies that you're just throwing at you at certain times. I've only been able to clear 2 of the bosses. I don't know how many there are in a run. So I don't know if I'm halfway through or still got a long ways to go. I'm not good at roguelites, but I enjoy them. Now and then you'll find like the legendary skulls, and they're incredibly overpowered and a lot of fun. Like the gambler who pulls out a gun, and whenever you use the ability, it's random if it's just a single shot or 6 shots all at once, or he'll throw dice and he'll do damage based on what pops up on the dice. There's a bunch of different kind of skulls, and that's the fun of the game, is it's going to be a werewolf run, or it's going to be a thief run. What skull do I want to do with that one?
Nice.
And it's fun. It's a roguelite. There's very little depth to it, but it's one I like, opposed to some of the other ones I've tried. I keep trying roguelites, but I don't like roguelites. I don't know why.
Are there any things that will like carry over from run to run, or is it like complete reset?
It's complete reset other than one resource. It's like these dark crystals that you pick up, and there's only one place to, there's a couple of places to spend them, but the big places at the beginning of the run, there's like a weird, it's not a skill tree, but it's like a leveling tree that you can put 10 into each section of the tree, and they cost more as you level it up, and that just boosts your overall stats, your physical, your magic, your crit.
And that's persistent.
And those carry over. And then sometimes in the run, you'll get a shop where you can spend some of those to get a good item to help you with the run. I don't. I just save them for that. That way I can do more successful runs later.
Yeah.
So I'm leveling through that.
It's kind of like a way of sort of grinding. Like if you just keep on going often enough, you'll eventually get some higher stats and make it easier.
Yeah, you'll get through a little bit more as you get more health and deal a little bit more damage. There's one perk that's like 3,000 gems, which is a lot. You'll clear it with not even 1,000 if you get as far as I do, which is like the third area, which just gets... it's stupid. There's just a lot of guys coming at you at once in the third section, and it's just rough. Because I'm not good at this game, but... there's certain guys you unlock, you find here and there, you break them out of cages, and like I unlocked a guy who will give me a skull in the beginning of the game, and a guy who will give me a starting item before the run starts, and then another guy who will give me just a buff that sometimes will persist through the run or just kind of get you going in the run. So there's different ways that you're unlocking to get your runs going on at a better point. But yeah, it's a roguelite. It's fun. It's a silly game. And a lot of these skulls are pretty drastic, and some of them are pretty unique. Like there's the alchemist who just shoots these little orbs out and has like an ability where it just throws a flask, but there's a meter that fills up on the bottom of it. And when it hits full, whatever direction you're looking, a golem will appear and shoot this big ball of energy out, and then it'll just go away. So you have to like time where you're looking with when that meter's going to fill so you can aim him properly. So, yeah, it's fun. It's worth a try.
Very good. I do have one last game, and then we'll take it wherever we want to take it. I finished off Princess Peach Showtime. It is done. I did not go for the 100% because there are certain levels and costumes I don't like. Yeah, I know.
Slacker.
But so there are some particular costumes and the levels that you go through wearing those costumes where it's very like text heavy, like the investigator, like Detective Peach. It's a lot of just walking around and selecting the right thing in the room that they want you to investigate, and then letting them scroll through some text. Is very minimal in actual gameplay, but like there are other things in the game, like Ninja Peach or like Thief Peach, Cowgirl Peach, where they actually do some fun mechanical things. Like they're actually building like, platforming or action levels. And it'd be nice if there were more of those, because those are more of my thing. Mika did not finish it. I don't know if she'll go back to it, if she's completely forgotten about it at this point, because she's back into Minecraft. But I played through it, and it was fun enough in certain points. And then there were other ones like Mermaid Peach. I was just glad when those levels were over. But that's it. That's all I got about Peach. Ryan, you haven't tried it yet, right?
No, I have not. I'm actually I'll probably pick up your copy of it. It sounds like it's probably not the sort of title worth shelling out for, but
yeah,
I'll check it out at some point.
All right, Ryan, you got anything else you want to tag in with?
No, I'm good here. Like the only game I've been playing is Unicorn Overlord.
Any movies that you've been watching that are worth shouting out?
I've been pretty busy watching movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that didn't come out in
2003? Yeah, quite a few that didn't come out in 2003. I don't even know where to start. There have been a lot of really good movies I've seen. I guess maybe a movie called Fremont. You guys heard of Fremont?
I have not heard of that one. No.
Came out last year. It's a very like small film in scope. It's about an Afghan interpreter that has been moved back to or been moved to America, specifically living in California, and it's just about her adjusting to life. In kind of a society that she doesn't really know, kind of feeling isolated. And it's a drama, ostensibly, but it really has these wonderful moments of humor throughout it that I think really make it such a good film. She ends up like she works at a place that makes boutique fortune cookies. So like the fortune cookies in them are all like handwritten, or not handwritten, but hand typed. Like each one is a unique message. It's not like they print the same messages over and over again. So she has that's kind of what she does for a living, and it's just about her dealing with kind of survivor's guilt from, you know, being a interpreter in the Afghan war, kind of not even being accepted by the other refugees that came to America from Afghanistan. Very, very small scale movie again, and deeply drenched in metaphor, but I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a great, great movie. She has these scenes where she goes to see a psychiatrist, essentially, and you know, uses these sessions to kind of better understand herself. But it's comedian Greg Turkington. He's a guy that works a lot with what are their names? Not the Mr. Show crew. Who I'm trying to think of the other ones are, but at any rate, regardless of that, would absolutely recommend it. Great, great movie.
Nice. Got another one?
Oh, I got many, many more.
Hit me.
Another one called Sweet East. I don't know if you've heard of this one either.
No. Mm-mm.
This one, I really didn't know what to expect, but you kind of just kind of go on a ride with this one. It's about a girl that is on a... Ostensibly, it sounds weird that this is the plot, because it's really not what this movie's about, but basically it's about a girl that is in high school, and she goes on a school trip to Washington, D.C., where she gets caught up in a shooting, and then just is sort of kind of not on the run, but just sort of doesn't go home. It's imagine something in the vein of a modern like Alice in Wonderland, where instead of like all of the various weird dreamlike groups of people, they kind of represent like weird pockets of society. So like one would be like a group of anarchists, then the next group is a group of white supremacists, and then the next is a handful of like avant-garde filmmakers, and the next is a bunch of Islamic extremists, you know. And all of these groups sound very like weird and hostile, but all of this is sort of like a positive experience for her as she moves through these various groups of people. And again, you really have to see it to get a sense of what the film is about, because it's definitely a satire. It's very, very satirical film. And we were actually just talking about that movie Dumb Money. Do you remember the two college students?
Yes.
One of them is Talia Ryder, and she's like the main character in this movie. And I think that's kind of the point about it is, you know, she sees all of these groups of people that have just, they're so in their own world, and she doesn't really relate to them. And they all kind of see too much in her. They kind of don't realize that she is just this kind of teenage girl. She's just sort of average, and there's no harm in that. It's fine being average. But everyone kind of overestimates her and always thinks too much of her when she's just sort of trying to get through life. You know, kind of just doing her own thing. And again, just kind of not wanting to go back home. Again, keep in mind it's on a school trip. Oh, and that's like the whole shooting that she gets caught up in is supposed to represent the... Do you remember the whole Planet Pizza shooting in D.C.?
Mm-hmm.
The QAnon guy? That's basically how this starts. She basically starts with her introduction into this whole world of weird fringe groups. On the outskirts of society with like being caught up in a shooting at a place like that from someone who thinks that there's like a child sex ring happening at a pizza place. So again, it's got a very weird one. Very good, but a very good one. I liked it.
Do you have The Holdovers on your list?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've seen The Holdovers. I love that movie. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was really good too. I watched that one. Paul Giamatti, and I don't know if I've ever seen the, our other leads in the movie before, but it's a boarding school right at like 1970. I think the new year is going from 1969 to 1970, so it's a period piece. And at this boarding school, the majority of the students are like going on their Christmas break back to their homes, but there are a handful of students who are unable to go home for, you know, various circumstances depending on the child. So Paul Giamatti is one of the teachers of the school and is kind of appointed, or sort of he was volunteered to stay there with them. And the lady who's like the head of the lunchroom is also there with them. And then like the movie starts, and I really knew nothing about it going in, but it starts with the group of kids who are going to be staying there, and they each got like their own storyline. Like, okay, well, this is going to be like an ensemble thing. We're going to like learn a little bit more about each of these kids, and they're going to like grow together as a group. And like, oh no, they're all leaving now. It's just Paul Giamatti, the lunch lady, and the one kid left. And like they're sort of a relationship with each other and all the particular struggles that they're going through, and you learn more about each character as the movie goes on. It's sort of a like a Pygmalion tale, where Paul Giamatti thinks he's going to change this kid, and by trying to change him, he also changes himself. It was really, really good. What do you think?
Oh, the same. Yeah, I think it's three really interesting co-leads, and they all have fascinating stories that kind of unravel as they go along. And again, you think that the Paul Giamatti character is the one that's supposed to be the most put together. And then in so many ways, he seems like he might be the most broken of them, you know, especially when it comes to his own regrets about kind of where he is and his lot in life and how he wound up being a teacher at this school, at essentially a boarding school. Not even like he thinks that if he were supposed to be a professor, he should be a professor at a prestigious law school, you know, or like an Ivy League school. And he's essentially just, you know, in some upper crust New England boarding school.
And yeah, he has other, this contempt for the sort of privileged youth who are attending.
Yeah, and who don't really appreciate, you know, the things that he appreciates and don't have this profound understanding of history and all this stuff. And then, yeah, you have the main teenager that he ends up spending most of his time with, who, by the way, is Dominique Sessa is his name. This is, I believe, his only movie. This is the only movie he's really been in. So, like, an amazing, like, breakout performance for him. And, you don't know why. You know something is happening to him. You don't know why he's such a kind of a shithead from the very beginning of the movie. But then you see the events and you see, like, how, you know, his father is in a mental institution. His biological father is in a mental institution. And his mom has already moved on and is with another guy that he hates, which is partly why he's not spending Christmas with them in the first place.
You know, yeah, so he's a shithead at times. He's definitely like deceptive, but I think like of all of the shitheads that he attends the school with, he's like the least of the shitheads. Because like they do a good job early on of contrasting him with, there's one other student in particular, but a couple other students there. And he's like the one who's like actually trying to put like some sort of effort at the school at their end, because they're passing like the final papers, and he's the only one that like gets anything higher than a C. There's the scene where the Korean student who is there wets the bed while they're in this in the holdover, the dormitories, and he helps them kind of like cover it up so that the other students who are staying there don't find out. So, you know, he's obnoxious and has like a bit of a sense of entitlement, but not to the same extent as some of the other kids who are there.
Yeah, true. That is a good point. I mean, like him side by side with virtually any other kid at the school, and you know, he seems like such a better person. But
and it does a good job of like making him seem much more redeemable than the other ones.
Because if it weren't for the journey that you see him go on, you would think he was just another like Holden Caulfield nihilistic guy. But there's genuine trauma in his world that shapes who he is. And then lastly, Devine Joy Randolph, she plays essentially the cook there, and she I believe she won didn't she win Best Supporting Actress
at
the
sure.
Academy Awards? I think she did. I know she at least got nominated, but oh, she's amazing. And like her, you know, like her story and about her son that passed away in the war are all so very sad. And yet she's the one that seemingly, you know, is the most put together and the one that really does kind of shepherd these guys along. Great story. I really like this. And just to say it's directed by Alexander Payne, who, you know, in 2002, About Schmidt came out. I raved about that movie. I think it's one of the top five movies of 2002 for sure. And, you know, he's also made like Sideways, which also stars Paul Giamatti. So the two of them are back together making a film. So, I think that it got a few nominations for like the Academy Awards and stuff. But, you know, I think it's just because that was how good the year was that this one kind of gets lost in the shuffle. It's a great, great movie.
Yeah. You got another one?
Oh, sure. I'll keep going. I mean, I don't know if we talked about this, but I actually did an in-theater double feature. I did Immaculate and then Late Night with the Devil.
No, we didn't talk about those ones.
Oh, both of those were great. Really great horror movies. Immaculate is basically about a young girl who is a nun who gets transferred from a nun, like from a a monastery, I guess you call it, in America to Italy. And of course this place is not what you would expect, and it becomes this really grisly, messed up horror film that is also I think in a lot of ways a message about a woman's right to choose. I think that there's definitely an undercurrent of a message there in that regard. It's just great. I really like this movie. And it stars Sydney Sweeney, who is like just in fucking everything now. She's like all over the place.
It's got some people in this too.
Yeah,
I don't know these actors' names.
Well, it's a largely Italian cast, and that is kind of one of the funny things about it, is that even though, like, she gets pregnant, as the title would have you believe, immaculate. And of course, the movie takes place over the course of like 9 months, essentially. And at no point does she bother to learn any Italian, which is just kind of funny. That the entire time she still struggles to know the language, which is just awesome. But it's you know, in spite of the gruesome content in it, it's a very sophisticated movie, and it looks great. It's really well shot. There's good tension and pacing. The scares are never too blunt. It manages to just be just the right amount of creepy and spooky and absolutely gross at times too.
I was watching the wrong trailer. Never mind. I don't know who any of these people are.
Nope. What trailer are you watching?
I don't know. It was the first one that popped up, and then I realized, like, oh, this doesn't say Immaculate. It says Abigail. Like, this is completely different. Why did YouTube do that?
Oh, that's a movie that's coming out in about a month. Yeah. I mean, that looks good, too. I mean, I want to see that, but the premise of that one is that, like, it's a preteen vampire girl who... gets left in a mansion with a bunch of killers, and she gets to hunt them down or something. I don't know. It looks like it'll be kind of a campy, fun bloodbath movie. You know, kind of like maybe like Morbius. Morbius if it were fronted by the adolescent girl. But yeah, no. But back to that point, like Immaculate, really, really good. And there's been like, by the way, there have been so many freaking like Catholic movies and like nun movies, like. Last year, Nun 2 came out, which was also surprisingly really, really good. I liked that one a lot. I thought that was pretty solid. And that one's set in the whole world of, Insidious. That's like part of that whole scene.
The whole universe.
Pope's Exorcist came out, which stars...
was that Russell Crowe?
Yeah, Russell Crowe is like the lead actor in that. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a pretty average movie, but he's good in it. Like he can still carry a movie on his own, like no trouble. In his sleep, he's great. And then I saw just to do a sizzle reel of all of the Catholic shit. There's also the Exorcist Reborn or
Exorcist Beginnings. Yeah.
Oh, and that was trash.
Yeah, that was no good.
Un-fucking watchable. That was so bad. Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I think we probably talked about that one, like, because the premise is, what if we just like did The Exorcist again, but now there's two possessed kids? Like, come on, it is a really, uninspired premise. I was trying to find a word to use other than lazy, because I don't like using lazy to describe things.
Well, no, I will for you. It's so bad, and like, and. The ending is so cheap too. Like it doesn't pay it off in any way, or it doesn't do anything that would like make a memorable ending.
The two possessed kids open a car dealership, and
that would have been better. And the devil sells Teslas.
I'm fine with that. Yeah, they charge like usury loans. So it's like 8-10% loans on
they take the money from their like outrageous interest rates and use it to pay the bond for Donald Trump's crimes that he committed, all the fraud.
That's great. Oh my god. Real quick side note on that. I love that the guy that ran the auto loan company that underwrote it came out and said, like, no, we actually originally agreed to do the $450 million.
Yep.
He just like fucking said it on the news. Like, and then, just like put it out there. Okay.
And then like, okay. And the lawyers just went to the court anyway and said, like, no, no one will do this. That feels like it should be a crime. If it's not a crime to tell a judge, we can't get this money when in fact you could.
Oh, well, Letitia James is going to bring it in front of a panel to discuss. So they're going to try to fast track this back to just letting them repossessing real estate. That's beside the point. That's not what we're talking about. That was the movie Immaculate, though. Immaculate,
but you know, we didn't time capsule this episode, so it's totally fair game.
Also, and I'm jumping ahead of you. O.J. Simpson died.
Oh, damn it. You got me.
Yeah, O.J. Simpson is dead.
O.J. Simpson died.
How do you feel about that?
You know, he didn't do it, obviously, because the jury said he didn't do it. But also, like I don't want to dance on the grave of someone who just passed away from cancer. Give us like a few months, then we'll dance on his grave.
Yeah, one of the comments I read said, it's a shame he never found that killer.
Oh, God. He said he was gonna. He said he wasn't gonna rest.
Another one I saw said, you know, O.J. Simpson dies at 76 of cancer. He is survived by his son, but not by his ex-wife.
Mm. Objectively true.
Yeah, no, and there's no winners. There's no heroes in anything associated with that.
We weren't like, rooting for cancer.
Right. It's clearly like a mistrial for what happened. Who was the guy that like literally was a cop on the scene falsifying evidence?
Oh, shit. I forget his name.
Furman?
Right? Yeah. Mark Furman?
Yeah. Like, that's what a miscarriage of justice that even happens. You know, yeah, he probably did it. O.J. Simpson probably murdered his wife and her lover. Like, yeah, he's a dirtbag. He actually went to jail for another crime he committed where he assaulted somebody over some, like, fucking sports merchandise.
Yeah, I remember that. And, we won't, like, torture this topic anymore, but one of, like, the most, like, entertaining trials of the late 90s, and like all of the stuff that has been produced around the trial of O.J. Simpson. There's a Cuba Gooding Jr. like it was like a mini series or something. There have been like there's a movie about the trial, and everything's been really good.
Mm-hmm. And he also has that book that he wrote, If I Did It. I think there is like talking about how he didn't do it, but if I did do it, this is how I would do it.
Right.
You know,
wild.
The killer's still out there, and I think that's the worst part about it.
Okay.
Anyway, the movie that you double featured with Immaculate, which one was that one?
It was a double something.
It was actually Naked Gun, starring O.J. Simpson.
He wasn't in the fourth Naked Gun movie. I don't remember why.
Oh, me neither. That's a shame. No, the other movie I watched was Late Night with the Devil.
Oh, right.
Which I absolutely love this one, too. I thought it was great. It starred David Destmalchian. I think that's got a hell of a name. But like, if you look at his filmography, he has been in so many fucking movies. It's kind of insane. Everything from like he's in the Dune series, Dark Knight, Suicide Squad. He's in the Ant-Man series. He was in Blade Runner.
Goddamn.
He was in Oppenheimer. Like, this guy's filmography is amazing, but he's primarily just a character actor. So you would instantly recognize the face from being a bunch of smaller characters in all these other movies, but this is his chance to be a lead, which is really, really cool. And the premise is that he is a late-night TV host in the 70s who is competing with the likes of Johnny Carson, in sort of a quest for ratings, he brings on a on like Halloween night, he has an episode with what he believes to be a like possessed girl, and then you're essentially, it's treated like a found footage horror film where you're essentially supposed to just be watching what they recorded that night and some newsreels sort of beforehand that sort of set the scene.
Oh, that's a really interesting premise.
I loved it. I thought this was really, really great. It's fun watching the pot boil over as you see this go from what seems like it's probably just, you know, stage theatrics and parlor tricks to potentially being real, to then also finding out more about the backstory of what this guy's been up to. And again, I don't want to spoil anything because there's a lot of really interesting twists along the way. And just the use of the use of the found footage aesthetic, and two, the making everything look and feel like the 1970s. There was so much effort done in that regard, from everything from like the set design to the wardrobes. And then when you get to the thick of it and see what's really going on in this movie, it's a shocker. You really don't know where this one's going to go. And it really pays off at the very end. So would totally recommend Late Night with the Devil.
That looked weird, that trailer I just watched. That looked weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a ride. It's a ride. I'd definitely recommend it, though. I think that's four movies I just did, though. So, like, if you got some movies to I got a dozen more I could go through, but if you got some you want to talk about.
I got just a couple of shows that I've been watching. Maybe we'll do a lightning round. I just watched the first episode of that Fallout show. I think that one's pretty promising. The first episode was like 74 minutes, so it's a long one. I think all of the episodes are near an hour.
Did they release it all at once, or are they doing bit by bit?
All at once.
How many episodes is it?
Eight. It's eight episodes.
I do want to watch this show because I really enjoyed Fallout. I like the story of Fallout and everything.
Yeah, I really don't know anything about Fallout. But the show, I think it's got a lot of promise. It's interesting. They're setting up like three main characters. One is this girl, Lucy, who lives with like these people. Like, I guess they call them vault people. They're the people who live underground that don't really have contact with the surface because they're like just preparing themselves for when the surface is habitable again. But the surface is habited by people. So it is.
Yeah, that's a whole.
It definitely has like some like religious vibes to it, even though they don't really like, do anything explicitly religious. But then you're also following this character, Maximoff, someone with an M. I think it's some sort of variation of Max, but he's they call him a squire to like this sort of like Iron Man-ish mech suit person. You don't actually ever see the person who's inside the suit, but he's like going through like this training regiment, this boot camp to become this assistant to the person in the Iron Man mech suit. And basically, when
he, is that the brother something?
Sure. The third character, who you don't really see until late in the first episode, is someone called the Ghoul, who's played by Walton Goggins, friend of the show. And it was just like this, they describe him as a mutant, but you also, you do see Walton Goggins playing this sort of entertainer character at the start of the show. And then you see him again pop up as the Ghoul, probably intended to imply like, hey, this is the same guy, but we'll see. I'm going to try not to jump to any conclusions. But it's like a sort of alternate history where, and it's gotta be like the 1950s, 1960s, nuclear bombs are detonated all over the world. And of course, there's like the nuclear fallout and the surface becomes inhabitable. Then you flash forward like 200 years into the future, which would be the middle of the 22nd century in the show's timeline. So it's interesting. I think that they've set up the stakes for the Lucy character really well. Now she's going to the surface. She's going to be, you know, a fish out of water, exploring like the world in its devastation, looking for her dad. I'm not sure where they're going with the Max character because he just like jumped into a helicopter following, you know, his Iron Man mech guy that he's supposed to go help out with something. I don't know. And then like Walton Goggins is such a charismatic, magnetic figure anyway that like, yeah, I would like to see more of that guy, please. I don't really care what he's up to. Just show more of him. But yeah, so far, thumbs up through one episode. And it's good that you ask, Wes, if Amazon dumped all the episodes, because sometimes they do tend to release piecemeal, which a lot of streaming services now drop things piecemeal so that, you know, you keep the subscription going rather than unsubscribe for a couple months, wait for more things to upload, and then resubscribe. So, or like burn through everything and then unsubscribe. But like a show that they did that with was Invincible, the second season, which they just finished up. And I like this one a lot more than the first season. The first season I thought was all right. It was like a lot of gore, a lot of violence, and a bit of like kind of uncomfortable, awkward teenage love story, which always makes me uncomfortable because like he's the male lead, Mark, in the show is always making the wrong decision no matter what he's doing in his personal life, and it's just hard to watch. But season two, really good. It's a bit more, I guess, episodic. There are like long story arcs that are taking place, but there are individual things happening in each episode that don't necessarily contribute to the overall like arc of the story, but they do set some things up. They also conclude some things, which is good to get some closure. Have you either guys watched season two of the show? I don't want to spoil anything.
I watched season one. I haven't got
it. Season two is well worth a watch. I liked it more than the first season, which I said.
I'm fine with you spoiling it. I may watch it. I may not. I'm not invested enough in the show. And I'm like, oh no, how dare you? Like,
Ryan, how about you? Any interest in watching this show?
I remember watching a little bit of season one, but it just didn't really capture me. And yeah, it's definitely got that, like, what would you say, early 2000s Saturday morning cartoon aesthetic, but just with like extreme
violence. Like blood gushing everywhere.
So I was like, it's all right, but I don't know. Like, I'm not even a big fan. Like, it's like The Boys. I know The Boys, from what I remember, is much more like nihilistic show than this one is, but none of that really, it's not really my thing.
Yeah, well, so something that ends up happening is there's a, they do a whole multiverse thing, which, you know, is a bit tired at this point, but there's a character that sort of hops around from the multiverse in order to get justice for his universe, because some of the characters took an evil turn, so he's trying to get revenge on other versions of those characters. So in exacting his revenge, he sends our main character Mark on this sort of multiversal journey where he's able to like open a portal, send him into a different universe, and then bring him back. And then of course, like during the course of their fight, Mark is able to get the better of him. They both end up in a different universe. Mark loses his temper, kills the guy. And then he's like, oh shit, I'm stuck in this other universe. And how they get him out is like almost the literal definition of Deus Ex Machina, where future versions of characters from his universe show up. And like, we've been looking for you for 20 years. Go into this portal and it will send you right back to where you left. Like, okay, so it totally undercuts any sort of drama that we're building up if future versions of characters can just show up to fix things. And that was like the one point in this particular season. I was like, all right, guys, maybe like if it,
it's like a Star Trek episode. We're like, oh, why don't we just use the war machine that we just happen to have? Oh, it fixes everything. We reverse the polarity. Yeah,
I take a lot of pot shots at the MCU, but that is a genuine gripe everyone should have with the MCU films. Every single one of those movies has some Deus Ex Machina that resolves everything.
I can't think of a what's an MCU movie? Wes, help me. Doctor Strange. What was the one in? Oh, was it the zombie Doctor Strange that was buried underground?
I wasn't prepared to put on the spot to remember any plot from any one of those movies.
He was buried in that plant on the building.
We saw that movie together.
Weird puppet, the zombie Doctor Strange to fight Wanda. Mm. And he had zombie things that happened.
Mm.
And then he had a third eye.
Anyway, neither here nor there. But it's you know, when you're doing a sort of comic book property as this story is, you can often find yourself like written into a corner, and a lot of times the easy way out is to just like introduce a character who's just a plot device, who has the power that can undo the thing. And it feels a lot like that, where you brought some characters in from the future who are just there to solve a problem, not going to contribute anything else, and solved. And I think like it's something that we could all use in our lives if we could just have our future selves in 20 years come back, solve our problems for us, and everything would be fine. Wes, would you invent time travel for us, please?
I'll tell you what, if I one day invent time travel, I'll come back to this moment right
and let
now
us know
at Ryan's house and walk up behind him right now while we're recording in 3, 2, 1.
Damn.
No. I failed. I actually just saw, we're already moving on our topics, but there's a really funny horror film that came out not long ago called Totally Killer. Have you guys heard of this one?
I have heard of this one.
It's a very similar to the premise of something like Back to the Future, where a girl has to go back in time to prevent the serial killer, like a slasher killer, from like killing her mom or killing her mom and her friends.
Yeah, it's Happy Death Day.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's similar to that, but you know, that actually is a moment where like she's in the part where, you know, she goes backwards and then she has to come back forwards into real time. Like the person in the future that's expecting her isn't there when she gets there, and she's like, oh no, I guess she's dead. And then later on she sees her and she's like, oh yeah, I forgot about daylight savings time, so I missed you by an hour.
Jeez.
That's funny.
The most horrifying thing about that is in the future they still do daylight savings time.
Yeah. Well, their future is our present.
Okay.
So if we're doing it, they're doing it.
Horrifying. Yeah. I don't want to do that ever again. But speaking of Saturday morning cartoons, X-Men 97, it's another show that is posting episodes like every week. They just posted the fifth episode.
Oh, nice. I've watched a few of those. I think I watched maybe like three of them.
So I've watched the fourth one. I haven't watched the fifth yet. The third one, is that the one where they did Inferno, Evil Jean Grey?
No, I don't know. Honestly, I don't remember the plot of a single one of them. I'm really bad about that.
That's how you tell it's a good show.
It was fun, though. It was good. I liked it.
Gambit
there.
Is there. You know, Rogue so is also there, who they're sort of building up the sort of romantic tension with Magneto. I don't like that they're using that storyline. I always hate it when writers use that storyline because, you know...
Oh, that's the premise, right. Yeah, like... he's Cyclops is a little frustrated because he thinks he's supposed to be in charge, but Jean Grey wants to step away from being X-Men, and Magneto is supposed to lead the crew.
Right. But
Magneto's fallen. There's a romantic thing with Magneto and
Rogue, and it's something that
that's weird.
And it's something that happens in the comics before Gambit is officially introduced. And then it's something that pops up in the comics from time to time, depending on who the writer is. And the age disparity is just really objectionable. Like, they're both consenting adults, but he's a man who, while, you know, because of comic book logic, has been de-aged a number of times, but he's a man in his 70s. And she's, like, late 20s at the oldest.
But she's from a trailer park, and she's been ripping.
It's true.
So she's probably more like 60.
So they look the same.
No. And thankfully, like they haven't.
It's like a weird Benjamin Button kind of thing. They're meeting in the middle. Like it's.
it's something that they haven't really gone back to in the comic books in probably about a decade, which, thank God, I was hoping that storyline would die off forever, but it looks like they're bringing it back for this animated show. But like one of the things I like about this animated series revival is most, if not all, of the characters have like their own storyline, their own journey that they're going on. They're doing some really interesting stuff with Storm. Rogue and Gambit always have like their love triangle thing happening, this time with Magneto, which gross. Scott and Jean and Clone Jean, Madeline Pryor, are doing their thing, trying to figure things out. And it was like Clone Jean, Madeline Pryor, who wanted to leave the team. So we'll see what happens now that proper Jean is back with the crew and Madeline Pryor has gone her way. Like, that was one of the things, like, they did that episode and they pretty much tried to do all of that storyline, which unfolded over the course of like 4 or 5 years in the comic book. They tried to do it in one episode and they hit a lot of the major notes and a lot of like the major outcomes of it. But, you know, they had to rework a lot of the storyline because different characters had already been introduced and had already gone away. So you know, they had to sort of retrofit it into the animated series storyline, but they went through it really quickly. And one of the things that I have liked about the series going since it restarted is some things they're taking their time with, like the Storm storyline that's happening. They seem to be taking their time and letting that play out. And it would have been really nice if they had like taken their time with this one as well, because Inferno is a really big, important storyline in the comics. It feels weird to say, but I think I like Jubilee in this show. Yeah,
Oof, John, who hurt
so
you?
What they've done is they've introduced Sunspot, who's sort of like the new kid on the crew. And he complains and gripes and is more obnoxious than Jubilee. And I think, like, now that you're getting that contrast, you're seeing, okay, Jubilee has, like, matured as a character. And you can see that because of how shitty Roberto is. So maybe just by comparison, but, like, she's right. They do a one of the episodes, I think it's, like, the fourth episode. For some, Ryan, you might not be there. They do a storyline with her and Mojo, which, you know, was kind of obnoxious, but not two of the more obnoxious characters in the show. But it's still fun.
So this X-Men show, is it like modeled after the old original?
It's a continuation.
Oh.
Yeah.
So do I have to go back and watch the old
you
one?
You could, which I did. You don't have to. No one's going to make you.
Could you watch just the season? Could you watch the original run series finale? Just watch that last episode and see where everything lands.
Yeah.
I'm still confused. Did I miss something? Was that Morph pretending to be Professor X, or is Professor X actually still alive and he's in hiding?
So in the animated series, in the last episode there, they were claiming that the professor was dead. I think that we'll get a reveal later on that he, the Shi'ar, the space people actually came, they took his body, and he's actually okay. They were able to, you know, resuscitate, revive, resurrect, whatever it is they did. I think he'll show up again. But, like, in that, that first episode you were talking about, that was Morph pretending to be Professor X. Morph is back on the team.
Yeah, that was kind of, because when I saw that, I was like, okay, he's part of the crew mm-hmm. now, huh? But I don't remember him being in the opening credits of the original 90s series when I watched it.
No, he was a character that, like, they had in the first season just so they could, like, have someone to kill off and up the stakes. But then they actually, like, when they resurrected him and, like, had to do with, like, the Mr. Sinister storyline, they actually did some interesting stuff. Like, his storyline in the original animated series was one of the more interesting things that they did. But, yeah. Thumbs up. It's a good little revival.
Is it worth watching the original one?
Yes. I think that there are some episodes well worth watching in the original animated series.
Yeah. I mean, if you can get past the 16:9 and the, 10 frames a second or whatever it is, the animation is so choppy. But it's in the 97, it looks a lot smoother and it's a little
more
high
for sure.
Def. Which, by the way, I think that's the one thing that's really good about it is that the fidelity
improved the quality.
They carried over the aesthetic. It actually looks so much like the original series, but it just looks a little crisper. Yeah. The animation looks a little more vibrant and colorful and detailed. And yeah, they tripled the frame rate.
Yeah, so they can actually have more intricate action sequences. A lot of, like, the action sequences in the original series, they're a bit choppy and they're very brief, whereas this one they actually have, like, extended fight scenes. You get to see,
I forget the term for it. Did they do a lot of, like, commercial jumps, like commercial jump scares?
Yeah.
You know, like, how I know Spider-Man was guilty of that, where it's like every time they lead into a commercial they have to do a cliffhanger.
Yeah. They do that a lot.
Yeah, I did that a lot.
But you get to see a lot of characters do more, especially like the first episode of the reboot, the revival. You get to see Cyclops being a little bit more of a badass rather than, you know, just kind of being a schlub who gets knocked over all the time.
X-Men 2.
Something, Wes, if you go back and watch the original animated series, you need to keep an eye out for a couple of things. And me and Rod, I think we talked about this on a previous show. You need to watch Wolverine and count how many times he says, "I can smell him." That's his catchphrase. And see how many times he just threatens to murder someone, teammate or otherwise. He does it all the fucking time.
Is this a drinking game?
I love it. It's funny that you mentioned that too, because, like, in 97, I had just talked to you about it, and then I watched an episode of 97 where that was like a Cyclops dig at Wolverine. He's like, "Why don't you go smell it for him?" or something like that. If you know what he said. He's just basically like, "Fuck off. Go smell him."
Yeah, it was Yeah, real good. They even did like a not joke with Cyclops, which, you know, is really like dumb and campy, but it was a callback. Like, I understand why they did it. I kind of wish that they hadn't, but I understand the callback they were making too in doing that. And the last show I've been watching. Have you guys been watching that Shogun show on FX? Oh, it's real good. I won't get into it, but check it out. You are going to need to do some reading. A lot of it's in Japanese. But general premise, yeah, it's like 17th century British explorer ends up sort of a shipwrecked in Japan. And sort of like the alliances that he makes in order to just ensure his survival and try to leave. And a lot of it is like very like... I don't know, for the lack of a better term, Games of Throne-ish, or like palace intrigue kind of stuff, but it's all like feudal Japan. So it's a really interesting show. Definitely worth a watch. All right, Ryan, lightning round.
Lightning round. Well, you could watch The Gentlemen. I don't know if you could. That's a TV show. I just actually watched the whole series, The Gentlemen.
That was good.
Yeah, with Guy Ritchie made it. Apparently, it's based on a movie he made maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
I liked it a lot more than the movie. I didn't like the movie so much.
I actually don't think I've seen the movie, but yeah, I think the TV show is pretty enjoyable. You know, I'm just not good for TV watching, honestly. Like, it's hard for me to keep up with really any series. I think that's kind of why I like movies, because even if it's a long movie, it's over.
Yeah,
it's like
I think like to your point, The Gentleman I think is 8 episodes in it, which I think is like kind of a standard. Like, if you're going to do a mini series, like a Netflix mini series, 8 episodes is kind of, it seems like what they shoot for. They could have done everything they needed to do in 6.
Yeah, and it's like it's essentially about a guy that sort of becomes the kingpin of a marijuana farm, kind of unwittingly, and there's, I don't know, there's a lot of whimsy to it. It's very silly for as serious as the content probably should have been. I don't know. I don't mean to be too harsh on it, though. I mean, I enjoyed the show well enough.
I think it helps that it's like marijuana and not like, you know, crystal meth or like some Breaking Bad shit. Like, of all the drugs, it's, you know, the least harmful, the least like socially taboo.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I also watched Guy Ritchie's actual movie from last year, The Covenant, which is interesting because it's also about Afghan interpreters. I was talking about that drama earlier, Fremont, which is about an Afghan interpreter, and so is his newest movie, which stars not Jared Leto. Who's the guy that's like Jared Leto?
I don't know. Wes, let's just name actors. Edward Norton.
No, who's in Donnie Darko?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
With that one. Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal's in it. It's not what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like this hoorah action movie, and it's really not. It's about him and Dar Salim is the name of the actor, who is his interpreter in Afghanistan, and it's about him trying to bring him, like, the trials they went through over there, and you know how quickly America just sort of evacuated from Afghanistan and let the Taliban take control again. So there's a lot of interpreters over there that were native Afghanis that got kind of lost in the shuffle. So it's about the combat they saw together, and then also his efforts to sort of sneak back into Afghanistan to withdraw him and his family. Really good movie. Yeah. And it's not an overdone, I mean, there's definitely a lot of action scenes in it, but it's not a high octane, overdone action movie. It feels very practical. Like, this is the real events and how you would have expected it to play out. And then, you know, you really get just two really great performances and like just total bros. Like, they're really, really great together. And in spite of them like kind of butting heads early in the film, you can see that they have a deep bond that forms over this thing that they're doing
now together. He's got his balls to the wall high octane action thrill ride coming out like in a couple of weeks. What is it, the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare or something like that?
Yeah, it's yeah, that's like a Wes Anderson title right there.
the coterie of ungentlemanly warfare.
the coterie of sinister intent. Yeah, no, lightning round. A movie that's in theaters right now called Wicked Little Letters. I absolutely loved. It's a highbrow comedy. You know, I think it's really, really funny. It's a British film. It's about, you actually, of all, I forget her name, but the actress that was in the main character in Men.
Oh yeah.
She's the main character in this. I think Jessie Buckley is her name. But anyway, it's set in the 1920s, and like the setup is that a very like upstanding noble woman in the community has been getting some very mean anonymous letters sent to her. And she accuses a neighbor of hers of having written the letters. And that neighbor then gets put on trial. It's just great. It's a really, really funny movie. It's got a really nice, it's also a courtroom film in a way. It's got a really fun trial component that happens in it. I just absolutely loved it. I thought it was great.
A courtroom comedy is an underused genre.
Yeah. And to be clear, like, it's not entirely in the courtroom. It's not like My Cousin Vinny. It's like the last third of the movie is where the trial actually takes place. It's good though. Loved it. Thought it was awesome.
Anything else for the lightning round?
That's enough for that. Like, I'm sure there's more we could talk about, but we gotta stop.
Okay. So I guess up next we'll do a retro show. And it's going to be a good one.
There's lots to talk about. Lots to talk about.
The month of games is not going to be up to the caliber of Wind Waker and Gen 3 Pokemon. But, you know,
I'm sad that Wind Waker came out a month earlier because Kara, for her new place, just stole her parents' Wii U. And so I'm totally playing some
Nice.
Waker. Because she's good, so I'm totally playing
Well,
some
what
Waker.
We can do is, like, I'll review the games one more time. And if there's nothing really that we want to spend a whole lot of time on, we can always revisit Wind Waker.
Oh, I don't know if I'm going to be playing it within a week.
Well,
I don't know
if you just want to give, like, a two-minute blurb on your opinion of Wind Waker. Because I'm sure, like, in April of 2003, the people who owned GameCubes at that time were probably still playing a ton of Wind Waker.
Yeah, it's so good. Oh, it's so
yep.
good.
There is one meme we need to talk about, a very important meme.
Good.
Which, brace yourselves for that. I won't spoil it.
A bunch of movies, tons of great movies. Tons of, like, movies that were higher quality than definitely what we talked about in March.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And we'll have some music to go through, too. I've listened to a couple of the albums so far.
Very nice.
I got plans to listen to a few more.
Yeah, one of them I'm already to pencil in is Album of the Year.
Ooh. Too. Oh, which one?
So, the Mew, Frainers. I don't know.
No, I haven't listened to that one yet. I think that's one you recommended on the last podcast, so I got it queued up.
Yeah. I've been listening to it nonstop this month. Like, I've listened to this album so many times, like, since it came out, literally, and I keep going back to it. This one's awesome album.
And then we'll wrap it up at the end of the month with the official show. That's it. End of podcast.
So long.
See ya. Thank you.